Welcome to Angel Answers with Amy Toy. I have a very, very special guest with me today. He is one of the best authors and changed my life with one of his former books called The Moses Code. His name is James Twyman, and James Twyman has always had a special affinity for St. Francis of Assisi, so much so that the New York Times bestselling author, film producer, and internationally famed peace troubadour, quote unquote, recently took orders as a Franciscan hermit and was inspired to write his most recent book sensation, Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis. But now Twyman will bring his stirring new musical on St. Francis, entitled, his musical is entitled Brother Sun, Sister Moon, to Broadway on February 20th through March 1st of 2020. And with the beloved saint as his model, will travel to a continent penniless, on foot, and with whatever food, housing, and further transportation that God will provide him to get there. He is, like I said, the New York Times bestselling author of 16 books, including The Moses Code and Emissary of Light. He has also recorded more than 18 music albums, including the Billboard chart bestseller I Am Wishes Fulfilled, along with Dr. Wayne Dyer, produced or directed 7 feature films, and has led millions of people and massive synchronized meditations while visiting such countries as Bosnia, Iraq, Northern Ireland, and South Africa, and also Israel. Welcome, James Twyman. How are you doing today, James?
I am amazing. And, you know, it's always very odd for me to hear introductions like that because it feels like you're talking about someone else.
You think? I know. Sometimes you're like, is that me or is that somebody else that impersonates me?
Did I do all of that? Wow. That's pretty impressive. It doesn't impress me, but when you hear it like that, that's a lot.
So what are you up to now before you go on this amazing tour? Where do you live and what are you up to before we get into the musical?
Well, I actually live in a little town in Mexico called Ajijic, which is on Lake Chapala near Guadalajara. I have a beautiful spiritual community here called Namaste Lake Chapala, where we have about 40 houses and people from all over the world are here. And this, by the way, this area is a huge expat location for Americans and Canadians and Europeans. It's the second best weather in the world. It's very safe and beautiful. And so we have this beautiful group of people who are dedicated to peace and dedicated to awakening. So I spend most of my time here, unless I'm on the road, which I will be very soon, for this musical, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, and the book and all of that.
Awesome. Well, by the way, the book was awesome. It had a great, great story. It was awesome. But it's really it's about St. Francis of Assisi. Why did you choose him to write about?
Well, as you said in the introduction, I've always had a deep affection and connection with Francis. Like you, I was raised Catholic. And when you're raised Catholic, you usually get what I call the birdbath St. Francis, which is the one that people fall in love with. You know, the Francis statues holding the thing of water for the birds to sing and dance in and drink from. And that certainly was a part of who he was. But as I grew older, I began to learn more about the more complicated St. Francis and the dramatic effect that he had on the whole world 800 years ago. And I realize now that he is as important to this time as he was to his own time. Because, number one, he is the most beloved of all the Catholic saints. People from almost every tradition love St. Francis. And because of his work as the first interreligious peacemaker, he has something so important to teach us about peace. And just to give you one example, this is the 800th anniversary of probably my favorite story about St. Francis. I actually wrote another book like 15 years ago called The Prayer of St. Francis, and I recounted this story. So 800 years ago, perhaps my favorite story of Francis occurred. And it happened during the Crusades. The Crusades were out of control at this point, and the leader of the Muslim force, whose name was the Sultan al-Kamil of Egypt, once said that he would give a Byzantine gold coin to any Muslim that would bring him the head of a Christian. And when Francis heard this, pretty dramatic, but when Francis was a very dramatic guy, when he heard this, he immediately said, okay, that's where I'm going. That's who I need to go visit. And of course, everyone, including the Pope, told him that you can't because you'll be tortured and killed. And Francis didn't care. He and his brother Illuminato, it took them three different attempts to finally get there. And as soon as they arrived in the Muslim territory, they were immediately arrested. They were tortured. They were sentenced to die. And there they were in prison, singing and dancing and celebrating, so much so that the Sultan was confused and wanted to meet this guy, this little Italian. So he had a meeting with Francis, and no one quite knows what happened, but we know what the result was. The Sultan was so moved that he gave Francis the gift of an ivory horn, which was the symbol of safe passage from the Sultan himself, giving him permission to travel anywhere in the Muslim territory to share and teach and just let people know what was in his heart. And this story, I think, is one of the most compelling stories of Francis because it shows his bravery, it shows his humility, and I think it also speaks to this time. You know, there's a great quote that I heard, actually, when I first started writing the musical Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, and this quote really spurred me on, and I would love to see if you can guess who said it because it's, you know, hard, you know, people don't usually guess. This person said, he said, our revolution failed. What we really needed were 10 St. Francis of Assisi's. Who do you think might have said that?
I'm going to guess George Washington.
George Washington. No one's ever guessed that before. But revolution, that was good, yeah?
Yes.
A lot of people say someone from the 60s, King or John Lennon. But the truth is, it was Vladimir Lenin, the architect of the Russian Revolution, who was an atheist, but he saw the power in this man who was completely 100% dedicated to peace. And when I heard that, I thought, okay, I'll be number 10. Who are the other nine? And that's when I decided to travel across the country doing this musical on the way to Broadway and the book and everything else. So, it was a very long answer to your short question, but Francis has always inspired me, and most of all, he's inspired me now to live the life that I envisioned like 25 or 26 years ago.
Wow, that is awesome. That's commendable, actually, because he is a good example. And you're right, being raised Catholic, I remember the affinity with the animals and, you know, the water fountain or, you know, the bird bath or whatever, you know. But I love his prayer of St. Francis of Assisi, make me an instrument of your peace and so on. So,
Well, that's a beautiful prayer for sure. And it's so popular and people love that prayer. And I actually begin the musical by singing that prayer. And yet, I hate to tell people, but Francis did not write that prayer. It is a... I know, it's almost like hearing there's no Santa Claus, isn't it? No, Francis did not write that. It showed up around the beginning of the 20th century, and it was attributed to him because it was published on the back of a holy card. It said a simple prayer, and on the other side of it was a picture of Francis, and so it became known as the Prayer of St. Francis. And yet Francis did write some very, very important prayers. Most important was the one he wrote on his deathbed, which was called Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, or Canticle of the Creatures. And it was Francis praising all of creation. And it was actually the first prayer or anything, the first piece of anything that was actually written in what we now know as the Italian language. And Francis gets credit for a prayer that he didn't write, but most people don't even know the most beautiful prayer he did write, the Canticle of the Creatures.
Mm, Now I have to look that up after this interview.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So why is it important for you to pretend to be St. Francis while on this tour?
Good question. Well, as you said, on this tour, which begins in Portland, Oregon, on January 4th, and then goes down to Santa Barbara, and then all the way across the country, the Broadway show goes from February 20th to March 1st. But, you know, I didn't want to just be like a normal actor and show up in New York and get an apartment or a hotel and do a musical. I wanted to do it like St. Francis would have done it. And so that meant traveling across the country penniless, in complete trust, not knowing how I'm going to get from place to place, along with my friend Bill Free, who will be coming with me, how we're getting from place to place, where we're going to stay, how we're going to eat, in total trust, because that's what Francis would have done. And I don't have any worry at all. I know we're going to be completely taken care of. But I also had the idea that once I begin that show in Portland, I wanted to enter into the character of Francis, much as a method actor enters into a character when they're doing a movie. Like, for example, you take, I think my favorite actor is Daniel Day-Lewis. And when Daniel Day-Lewis was doing Lincoln, Spielberg's Lincoln, for that entire time, those 9 months that they shot, he did not leave character. Every night, his wife slept with Abraham Lincoln. And I even heard that when they finished shooting, it took him probably 3 days to get his Irish accent back. That's how deep he went. And I thought, what if I could do the same thing? What if I, for that 2 months, lived as St. Francis? Not saying that to anyone, not telling people I'm St. Francis, but in my mind, coming from that perspective, to see how that would change me, to see how that would influence this performance. So that's the reason I'm doing that, because it's kind of an experiment. I want to see what will happen within my mind, within my own life, and how that will impact this performance as I travel across the country.
Wow. And that's awesome. You got, oh, wow, that's a reliance on God that a lot of people don't have today. You know, and
yeah,
that is phenomenal. We can learn a lot from your example. And wow.
Well, I'm trying to learn a lot from Francis's example. So if any of that rubs off, I'm very grateful. But as I said before, I think, especially in these polarized times, Francis's example is as important today as it has ever been. We need people to be that dedicated. We need people to be 100% just as he. And also Claire. Let's talk about her for a moment, because Claire so often gets left out. You know, being a nice Catholic girl, you probably know who St. Claire is.
Yes,
she was
I do.
The feminine counterpoint to Francis, and just as important, in some ways even more important. There were at least two stories of how Claire saved the town of Assisi from being destroyed by armies. At least twice that happened. And yet she lived as a cloistered nun, so we don't know much about her, not like Francis. But she was the very first woman to leave everything behind and to come and follow his example. And her family was the closest thing to royalty that they had in Assisi. They were from a very ancient Roman family. So it was a very, very big deal when Claire left everything and decided to live with the poorest of the poor. And so that dedication, that level of commitment that both Francis and Claire had, that's what changed the world 800 years ago. And we have to remember that they lived at the very end of what we call the Dark Ages. People don't often know what came right after that. And the answer is the Renaissance. Because of Francis, he so inspired the artists and the musicians of that time. He was a major inspiration for the Renaissance. And I really believe that today we need that again, because this is a very dark, shadowy time. And maybe if those 10 St. Francis's came along that Vladimir Lenin talked about, maybe that would be enough to initiate a new Renaissance where this polarization dissolves and we can begin to realize our oneness again. That's what I'm hoping anyway. And I hope that in some small way, this musical and the book inspire that.
Yes, I agree with that. The times we live in, awful. Yeah. And anyway, What inspired you to write the musical Brother, Son, Sister, Moon?
Well, oddly enough, Bruce Springsteen.
Really? I love to hear this story.
Yeah, it was Bruce. It was the boss. Bruce did a one-man musical on Broadway called Springsteen on Broadway. And goodness, I wanted to go and see it live. I love Bruce Springsteen. And they released the musical on Netflix. And I watched it on Netflix, and I loved it. It was basically Bruce telling the story of his life and then picking up the guitar and singing a song. And it was brilliant. And I thought, what if Francis could travel back 800 years and do the same thing? What stories would he tell? What songs would he sing? So it was right after I saw that Springsteen video that I sat down and began writing it. I think that the musical, music and all, took me maybe 3 weeks to write. And I performed it on my book tour when Giovanni and the Camino of St. Francis came out earlier in the year. But then the invitation came to do it on Broadway. So I've had so much fun traveling around the world doing it, but doing this tour and doing it in New York. And by the way, I should say that when we're in New York, we're going to be doing something that, as far as I know, no other musical has ever done. And that is, every day we're going to be on the street passing out free tickets to the homeless and inviting them to come and to join us and to just unite. And this is what Francis would have done. And we're going to have a soup kitchen in the back of the theater where we all will join together in a nice bowl of soup and bread. And half the audience will be filled with people from the streets. So I'm so excited about this. To me, this is the kind of fire that Francis would have created and that he would have inspired 800 years ago. And if we can do even a fraction of that today, I think that will maybe start heading us in the right direction.
That's awesome. I think that's great. Wow. I'm shocked. I'm just sitting here. If you could see my jaw drop to the floor, you would be like, okay, Amy.
I was just talking to my community here in Mexico earlier today, and we had a similar experience. And there's a word in that the Brits like to say, which is gobsmacked. That's when your jaw hits the floor. And this, what we're experiencing here, is God's smack. We've been smacked upside the head by God, and that's a good thing.
Yes, I call it the spiritual 2x4 upside the head, as my dad used to say. And I'll credit him for that. And sometimes that's what has to happen, is that 2x4, you need to be hit upside the head a few times to get a lesson or something.
Isn't it interesting how something as simple as someone giving everything, like Francis did 800 years ago, how that can be so inspiring, or even seem so unusual, that there would be someone who would, in Francis's mind, simply try to see if it was possible to do what Jesus said. Now, that shouldn't be so inspiring, because that's something we should all be doing. But it's so unusual that when someone really commits to it, it's so unusual that it hits us like that spiritual 2x4 and wakes us up. And that's what needs to happen. We need to be woken up. And it's happening everywhere. A lot of the ridiculous things that are going on in the government and elsewhere, I think this is part of the wake-up call. But now we have to move into action. And for me, moving into action, I didn't want to do something that was against a person or against a way of governing. I wanted to do something that was for what I was in favor of, for peace, for harmony. And no character is better than that than St. Francis. And so that's why I'm so impassioned and excited about this musical and the book, because I think it gives us a different perspective and an opening that allows us to step through a door that we really, really need to step through right now.
I agree with you 150%, let me tell you. Definitely. The next question I have for you, it has been 7 years since you wrote a book. Your latest book, entitled Giovanni on the Camino of St. Francis, broke that drought. Why did you wait so long to write this book?
Well, when you've had any success at all as an author, your publisher wants you to keep putting books out, keep the brand going. And after 15 books, I just realized I didn't have anything new to say. And I didn't want to just write a book to write a book. And so I basically said, I'm not going to write a book until one is just knocking at my heart. And I'm kind of forced to because I've become so excited about it. So it took me 7 years. And about, well, a few years ago now, the first time I walked the Camino of St. Francis, which is about 110 miles going from a place called Averna, a monastery, along the little trails and small roads that Francis would have walked 800 years ago on his way to Assisi. And as I was walking that with a group a number of years ago, I just started playing with this idea, a story that really haunted me of a woman named Anna who has had a tough life. And she was originally from Italy, but left when she was 17 because she had become pregnant and was a disgrace to the family. And this is the first time she's ever come back, and now she's in her late 50s. And she decides to walk the Camino. Even though she doesn't like St. Francis, doesn't believe in God, she somehow needs to walk this Camino. And she meets this young Italian guy named Giovanni, who ends up, through the simple example of his life and the stories that he tells her, begins to melt her heart. And I played with this story for a few years, and finally it just wouldn't let me go. So I said, okay, I have to write this. And about a year and a half ago, I sat down and began writing. And for me, the most fun was that I knew how it began and I knew how it ended, but I didn't know anything in the middle. So writing the book, I would literally just sit down in front of my computer and say, okay, what happens today? Where are they going to go today? I knew where they were going because I know the routes, but I didn't know what would happen along the way. So it was just as fun for me to write as I'm hoping it is for people to read, because I had to discover it along the way.
That's interesting, because I've heard about this route. I think Wayne Dyer did something similar. Maybe not the whole thing, but I think he did.
I don't think Wayne's ever done the Camino, but Wayne had a great love of St. Francis, and he I think he's brought one or more groups to Assisi.
To
just be in that vibration, which I've done, I don't even know, 20 times maybe myself. I bring people there every year, and I walk. Well, I should say now we're doing what I call the Camino Light. Because it's hard. It's a hard Camino walk, and you're up and down a lot of hills. And I just a few months ago did the first Camino Light, which means we don't walk the whole thing. We just walk certain parts of it, maybe 3 to 5 miles a day, and then we find little Italian towns or villas or monasteries where we can sit and sip cappuccinos and nice glasses of red wine. And it's just a lot better. And so I'm going to be bringing another group next year. And I should say that if anybody wants to sign up for any of those things or even watch 20 minutes of that musical, all they need to do is go to jimmytwyman.com, which is J-I-M-M-Y-T-W-Y-M-A-N. You can get information on the Camino. You can see what cities I'll be in. So if I'm near you, you can come and see it. And when I was in Assisi a couple of months ago, I performed the musical there, and it was shot professionally, so I have the first 20 minutes of it up there online. So gives people a chance to see it, and if you get on our email list, you'll get alerts as I'm doing the cross-country trip and just kind of keep track of where we are.
Oh, wow. I'll definitely sign up for that. Are you coming to Florida?
Not on this trip, but I'm hoping to put together a special tour of Florida in the latter part of 2020.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. That would be so awesome to meet you in person. Let's talk about you're called the Peace Troubadour. Why is that? That's interesting. That's an interesting designation or, you know, title to have.
Well, it was actually 25 years ago that I was given that name, Peace Troubadour. It started when, and this brings us back to St. Francis once again, but from a different angle. I should say that in 1986, I think it was October 27th of 1986, Pope John Paul II did something that had never been done before. He called all the leaders of the 12 major religions of the world to Assisi, the home of St. Francis, mm-hmm. not to discuss or argue, but to simply bring the peace prayer from their tradition. So the Dalai Lama was there for the Buddhist and all the other leaders, including the Native American tradition, the Native African tradition. And there was a ceremony where they each prayed their peace prayer. And a friend of mine named Louis Randa was there. And he was there by accident, by the way. He didn't plan on being there for that day. But he was so moved by these prayers, he brought them back and began distributing them. And a friend of mine a few years later gave me a copy. This was 25 mm-hmm. years ago now. And I began to read the first prayer, which was the Hindu prayer, which begins by saying, O God, lead us from the unreal to the real. O God, lead us from darkness into light. O God, lead us from death to immortality. Shanti, shanti unto all. And as I read those words, I literally began to hear music, almost as if it was playing in the next room. And I picked up my guitar and just began to play along. And one after another, I did the same thing, as if they were already written, and I just almost caught them. And within 1 hour, I put all 12 of the prayers to music. And that's when it was actually Louis Randa, who I mentioned before, who said, you're the peace troubadour. And I said, okay, I'm the peace troubadour. And at that time, I wanted to be like St. Francis. I wanted to be a penniless troubadour, just traveling around the world sharing these prayers. And the first place I decided I wanted to go to was Bosnia and Croatia during the Balkan War. And because I really felt that a peace troubadour should be willing to go where peace is needed. And I had this remarkable adventure where I was taken up into the mountains between Bosnia and Croatia, where there was a group of mystics known as the Emissaries of Light. And I had this amazing adventure with them. And I came back and thought I should write this down, and I wrote my first book. Actually, in 2 weeks, I wrote the whole book, and 2 days later, it was bought by a publisher. It was a miracle, and it became a big bestseller, and suddenly, I was no longer a penniless troubadour. and I was so grateful for that, but here I am now, all these decades later, kind of back where I started, just wanting to travel and share and live like St. Francis. Because I don't need all the stuff. I don't need the goods. What I want is goodness. And that's what, Francis was the rich kid in town. He was the son of a rich cloth merchant. And then his heart was cracked open when he was in prison for a year when Assisi was battling Perugia. And his heart opened and everything changed. He no longer saw as valuable that which had no value. And one day he finally stripped naked in front of the whole town and walked out. And that's how it all began. So Francis gave up everything. And I feel like that's kind of happening to me now, 25 years later, after that first inspiration. But I've had the chance, since then to travel to so many countries at war and have some amazing experiences. So it's been an amazing 25 years.
Yeah, definitely. How were the peace missions around the world inspired by St. Francis of Assisi, though?
Because of that story that I mentioned earlier with Francis going to the Sultan. For example, I remember the first time I really felt that, it was in 1998, and the book Emissary of Light had just come out. I was in the UK doing a book tour there. And I was on a radio show called the James Whale Show, which is a huge radio show in England. And I was told to be careful because he likes to push his guests. In fact, the people who were on right before me had stormed out of the interview. I had no idea why, but I thought, oh, great, here we go. Now, this was at a time when we were right on the brink of war with Iraq again. And I'm doing the interview, and this James Whale said, okay, Mr. Peace Troubadour, how is this more than just a New Age fantasy? And I said, what I really want to do is go to Iraq, go to Baghdad, and sing the Muslim peace prayer to Saddam Hussein. Maybe if I did that, a miracle would happen. Well, what I didn't know was that the Iraqi ambassador to Great Britain heard this interview. And 3 days later, I'm on an airplane flying to Amman, Jordan, and then taking a 12-hour taxi drive from Amman to Baghdad. And there I was in Baghdad. In fact, I'll tell you one quick story. When I arrived there, literally the first time I stepped foot onto Iraqi soil, the Iraqis were paying for all of this. And they were putting me up in the nicest hotel in Baghdad, which was called the El Rashid Hotel. And when you step out of, you know, stepping in through the door of the hotel, there's a beautiful mosaic on the ground that you have to walk over. And in the very center of this mosaic is this the face of a man snarling. I stop and I look at it because he looks familiar. And at the bottom, in the mosaic itself, it says, "Bush is a criminal." not George W., but his father, because he started the first Iraqi war.
Right.
And so this was literally my welcome mat. But I have to say that my experience there was so brilliant, probably just like it was for Francis with the Sultan. All I found were amazing people who were just as dedicated to peace as I was. In fact, after this big concert that I did at the National Theater, they had a big party for me, and all we did was sit around singing Simon and Garfunkel songs in Baghdad. So you never know. And, you know, most recently I did a concert, this is a couple of years ago now, on a hill looking into a Syrian village held by ISIS. And there I am up on this hill with about 100 people doing this concert. And my favorite thing about that was that Bill Maher caught wind of it, and probably the best publicity I ever had was when on his show he called me the idiot folk singer from Portland.
Oh, man. Wow.
Great publicity. And in that case, and in also the Iraqi case, there were millions of people who knew about these peace concerts and stopped and prayed at the same time. And there's so many miracles I could go on and on about. But it just goes to show that when we focus in that way, when there are people from all over the world who come together and focus their light and their love on a situation, it changes that situation. That's the power of prayer.
I totally agree with that. I pray every day. I pray all the time. And that's what I tell some of my clients. I'm like, just pray about it. Just pray and you'll see a miracle. Your prayers will be answered. Maybe not the way you think they should be, but pray about it, you know, before you do. Yes, definitely. So, gonna jump around a little bit here. You joined the Franciscan Order when you were 18, and then left when you were 20. What inspired you to both enter and then leave?
Well, when I was young, I was very mystical, and I had a great love of St. Francis. And when I was about 17, I met a Franciscan named Francis Dominic, and I just loved him. He was exactly what you would expect from a Franciscan, so open-hearted, so loving. And I thought, okay, I'm supposed to be a priest. So right out of high school, I entered the Franciscan Order, mainly because of Francis Dominic. And I loved it. I still look back on it as two of the most wonderful years of my life. But I wasn't quite ready to make that commitment. I was so young and immature and naive. Mm-hmm. So I left, I finished school, and I did get married and had my daughter, and now I'm a grandparent, so I'm so glad that all of that happened. But Francis never let go of me. There's a saying, once a Franciscan, always a Franciscan. And it's so true, because the spirit and the energy of Francis is so seductive. And that's why I can't get away from it. And I keep writing these books and doing musicals all about him. And then I have a friend who is a Catholic bishop. And I asked him if he would take private vows for me. In other words, I'm too old at this point to join the Franciscan Order, but I could take private vows to live that spirituality as close as I can with the bishop. So I did that about 2 years ago now. And I feel like Francis, because Francis had the same dilemma. All he really wanted was to go up to his cave at the top of Mount Subasio and just commune with God and with nature. Yeah. And that's what I would love to do. I really want to be a hermit and just pray all the time. But I keep getting inspired by these books and projects and doing interviews like this and And I'm just so passionate about it. It's hard for me to relax into my hermit self. Maybe one day, but for now, I want to do this tour. I want to live like St. Francis. And as I said before, you know, as Vladimir Lenin said, what we need are 10 St. Francis. What he really said was what Russia needed were 10 St. Francis, because he recognized that if they had had 10 people like that, they wouldn't have needed a revolution. And so I'm saying today, I'll be number 10. If there are another 9, I think we can change the world. I think that's what it's going to take.
I agree with you. That's why I do interviews like this. That's why I educate people. There's a different way of life than what we're living now in this country, in the United States. And so that's why I do this work, you know, to educate people. Because when you change yourself, you change the outer world. You change your inner world, you change your outer world, in my opinion. So it all starts with me, right?
That's
right. So you took these private vows as a Franciscan hermit, as you mentioned. How does that align with performing the musical across the country?
It doesn't.
I thought so, but, you know, hey, I've got to ask the question.
Yeah. It. Well, I think what I'm called to do is just to, not so much to be a hermit, because at least right now, that's just not going to happen. I'm too on fire. I'm too excited. I have too much I want to share, and maybe at some point that will make sense. But right now, I just need to follow this fire as closely to Francis as I can. And that's why, for example, this tour, traveling across the country penniless, in total trust, in total surrender, that made a lot of sense to me. Because obviously I'm not being a hermit, but I'm trying to imitate Francis. And Francis was the great imitator of Jesus. So indirectly, I'm imitating Jesus. And there's such a freedom and there's such power within that. Francis felt it 800 years ago, and he initiated the Renaissance. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, some people say you're going to be like Forrest Gump. People are going to join you on the road, and they're going to just keep walking all the way to New York. Who knows? I have no idea what's going to happen, but I don't have to. My only thing is to commit to this and to say, I am going to go for it. And if other people want to go for it, fine. So I may not be, you know, a very good hermit because I'm not, but hopefully I can do something else and live up to this legacy.
Yeah. It's more about example, I think too. We need more, I don't want to call it superheroes, but I think more examples out there like yourself. And we need that more than ever in this world, in this where we're living, definitely. And speaking about that, there's so much we can talk about minimalism and simplifying our lives. How does that relate to St. Francis, you think?
Minimalism very much relates to St. Francis because he was the ultimate minimalist. He was the supreme minimalist. As I said before, he came from one of the richest families in Assisi. He had everything, and he marched off to war to be a great knight, and that didn't go very well for him. And ultimately, he knew that for him to have what he really longed for, he had to give everything up. And he was so passionate and so severe, even in the way that he lived it. At first, it inspired so many people. The first friend of his to follow him was Bernardo de Quintavalle, and he was very rich as well. He was, you know, one of the most influential people in Assisi. He was a war hero, and he was so moved by Francis that he left everything. Before long, hundreds and then thousands of men and women were following Claire and doing this, and it took over Europe at that time. But as more and more men came, this didn't happen to Claire. This only happened to the men. They began to say, this is too hard. Can you lighten up a little bit? You are the supreme minimalist to the point that we can't take it. And Francis always said, this is the path. We need to own nothing. We need to be follow Jesus as the poor. And so the only thing he had were the clothes on his back, and he really didn't even have those. And ultimately, the funny thing is, almost as soon as he died, everything changed. Even before he died, control of the order was taken away from him. And after he died, they began to build major cathedrals and basilicas in his name, which is, would be the opposite of what he wanted. So this is another thing that I think Francis can teach us today, the power of simplicity. And there's so many people who are minimalizing their lives. Here in Mexico, we have dozens of tiny houses where people come from all over the world to live in, because they're letting go of everything. And they want to live this more minimal life. So Francis has so much to teach us today.
Definitely. And what do you hope to gain by living like St. Francis on tour?
Oh, goodness, that is a good question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that one. And the answer is, I don't know. I don't know what I hope to gain. Oh, maybe just to experience that love and that oneness as he did. Maybe that's it. To go so deep and to soar so high that I'm somehow able to touch the hem of that experience that he so beautifully embraced 800 years ago.
Yeah, well, like you said, you'll find out.
you will find out.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good for your soul growth, and I, like I said, it's gonna be good for a lot of us to, you know, be observers, witnesses of this, and how maybe we can apply that to our lives. Maybe not to the extent you're doing, but to apply it to our lives in some way, if we can take away something from it, and that's awesome. So I'm gonna, I've got a couple more questions, and we'll wrap up the interview. And it, the U.S. seems to be completely marginalized right now. What do you think St. Francis would say about this?
Well, the same thing was happening then. Very similar, actually. Mm-hmm. At that time, cities and towns would go to war with each other. It wasn't countries. It was cities, towns. And for Francis, it was always the neighboring Perugia, because Perugia was a papal city, and Assisi was an independent city, and then there were the cities that were aligned with Frederick the Great, the Holy Roman Emperor, and it was a terrible, constant battle. Atrocities that you wouldn't believe were going on. And and Francis's whole thing was to witness to something higher. He, one of my favorite quotes from Francis is when he said, "Our only job is to teach the gospel wherever we go, and only when necessary, to use words." So Francis didn't rely upon words. He relied upon presence. And he relied upon being the change, as Gandhi would say. I think that's what we need. We need people today who aren't talking so much, who aren't arguing, who aren't trying to convince other people. We need people like Francis who can listen deeply. And through their example, they can begin to transform the world.
Very true. So after you do this off-Broadway performance of the musical, what are you going to be up to, and where can people find you?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I know I'll be back here in Mexico because, you know, we have a lot of people who live here, and so I need to be present for that. So that'll be where I'm going to be coming home to. And once again, if people want to stay attuned, they just need to go to jimmytwyman.com, and they can get on the email list. They can watch 20 minutes of the musical. They can get the book there and see the schedule, so you can see if I'm going to be coming into your area when doing the musical. And but I will say I love doing this performance. It's probably the most fun I've ever had. So I have a feeling I'm going to be doing this for years to come.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show. It was my honor to meet you today. I appreciate you so many ways for coming on and educating our listeners on a different way of life and just enlightening us. It was a true pleasure to have you on. And let me know what your next book is. We'll have you on again.
We'll see if there is one.
Probably. You've got a lot of work to do yet, I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. And this is Amy Toy with Angel Ends with Amy Toy. And may the angels carry you through to next week. Take care, everybody.
Look up high.